probably the bottom line of what we've been discussing could be summarized in certain ways. Communication has to be, must be, and certainly is, the lifeblood of the organization. For maximum effectiveness in the communication process, there are at least 10 things that every manager and administrator must remember. Number one, understand the interpersonal communication model and identify where breakdowns can occur. And the reason you're doing this is because you want your communication to do that, actually to express meaning, to have an end result of understanding. So a manager must understand the interpersonal communication model. How does this whole communication process work? And that's what we've been discussing. And identify where it's not working in your organization. Secondly, I think it's important for every manager and administrator to strive for two-way communication where feasible. This demands feedback from the communicator and the sender. Number three, certainly understand the advantages and the disadvantages of different communication channels. Number four, know the role that perception plays in disrupting communication attempts. Remember perception and inferences. And we hear and then we perceive, and yet our perception may not actually be what is being communicated. Know the role that perceptions play in disrupting communication attempts. Number five, every manager needs to work at improving speaking, writing, and nonverbal skills. Number six, every manager should become a better listener, more effective and efficient reader, and certainly an astute observer of nonverbal signals. Number seven, every manager must deliver important downward communication to subordinates. Explain, explain, explain. Number eight, every manager should facilitate and encourage upward communication from subordinates. Have the open door policy. Have suggestion boxes. Take surveys. Manage by wandering around. Be face-to-face with your people. Encourage that communication from your subordinates. Then number nine, establish effective mechanisms of horizontal communication so that all areas of the work are open and communication flows freely through the various departments of the organization. And then number 10, understand and properly manage informal communication networks. We talked about the grapevine and how the manager should understand the fact the grapevine is a reality that he has to live with, and it can be an important tool for understanding the comprehension of the and mindset of the employees, and also for the dissemination of factual information that employees need to know and understand. I think probably we've seen that managers spend a large percentage of their time engaging in one-on-one interaction and managing communication throughout the organization. The communication process involves a sender who conveys information to a receiver. Problems in communication can certainly occur in all stages, whether it's encoding or transmission, decoding or interpreting. Noise in the system further complicates communication, creating more distortion. Moreover, feedback may be unavailable or misleading. One-way communication, as we have seen, flows from the sender to the receiver with no feedback loop. However, in two-way communication, each person is both a sender and a receiver, as both parties provide and react to information. One-way communication is certainly faster and easier, but often less accurate than two-way. Two-way communication is slower and more difficult, but it is often more accurate and leads to better performance. Communication occurs through oral and written channels. Electronic mail is a relatively new communication channel that's having a huge impact on organizational communication. Media richness refers to how much information a channel conveys. Media richness is one factor that can help managers decide which channel to use in sending their messages. Formal organizational communication flows, as we have seen, in three directions: downward, upward, and horizontal. Many types of information are sent downward from managers to employees. Nonetheless, employees often lack adequate information. Problems like information overload, lack of openness, and filtering cause information loss and distortion during downward communication. Upward communication flows upward from employees to management and from managers to their bosses. The potential problems are similar to those of downward communication. Information overload may cause missed or neglected messages, and subordinates may even withhold or filter information for what they feel is their own protection or safety. For these and other reasons, managers may not learn about important problems and may not have vital information. Horizontal communication flows among people in the same hierarchical level. Information shared horizontally adds coordination and problem-solving and helps resolve conflict and ultimately contributes to morale and effectiveness. Downward, upward, and horizontal communication can be informal as well as formal. The informal flow of information can contribute as much as formal information to organizational effectiveness and morale. Informal communication, as we certainly know, having talked about the grapevine, can also be extremely destructive if it's mismanaged. Effective management includes managing both formal and informal types of communication in downward, upward, and horizontal directions. The importance of communication is something that cannot be overemphasized or overstated for managerial consideration. In these last moments, we have certainly covered quite a bit of material, and it might be wise just to maybe summarize some of the things that we have seen thus far. We've talked about a principle referred to as audience analysis. To enhance communication with your audience, you must analyze it carefully to formulate a message in the way that the audience members will understand and find meaningful. Audience analysis can be accomplished in a variety of ways. Sometimes market research or demographical data is available, but frequently audience analysis is based on thinking about your impressions, empathizing and imagining that you are a member of your audience, or by asking the advice of someone that you trust. The audience can be analyzed individually, or trends can be considered collectively for a group. We've also mentioned business communication. This is a term that's used to describe both a field of study at the undergraduate level, as well as the process of communicating in business. Business communication focuses primarily on skills, with a strong emphasis on writing. It also focuses on the micro instead of the macro level of communication. Business communication as an academic study derives its content by necessity from other fields as a result of its focus on these skills. Where corporate communication is narrow in its focus on function, business communication must be broader, though at the same time more fragmented and practical. One of the things that we noticed as we were moving through some of the concepts of communication and the actual mechanism as to how the communicative process works is the idea of communication channels. Now, communication channels are distribution vehicles for any type of communication. A communication channel could be a memo, telephone, a speech, a one-on-one meeting, a seminar, staff meeting, and so forth. Choosing the proper communication channel is frequently a challenge for organizations because there are more ways to communicate as well as a wider range of constituencies today than ever before. with the development of a corporate communication strategy, it is important for the organization to select the best channel for the message, and it's also critical to select the proper structure and include the right information in the message itself. Together, these components enable the appropriate delivery of the desired message. With modern technology, the possibilities for channel choice strategy have widened to include choices among direct contact, telephone conversations, and even computer-mediated communication. All of this is certainly a part of what some managerial experts have referred to as communication strategy. Communication strategy serves as the basis of all managerial communication. In communication strategy, there are five basic components. First of all, there is the communicator. Secondly, the audience. Thirdly, the message. Fourthly, the channel choice. How we'll deliver the message, in other words. And fifthly, the culture strategy. Are there certain things within this culture that we need to know that would add meaning to our message? Variables that influence communicator strategy include the setting objectives, the selecting of a communication style, and certainly establishing credibility. Audience strategy recognizes the importance of knowing who will be included in your audience and then analyzing how to best direct a message to them based on their level of knowledge and their probable biases. In education, this is often referred to as the law of readiness. Are these individuals ready for this information? Are there some background materials that we need to share? Is a foundation necessary before we proceed? Now, message strategy entails the incorporation of either a direct or indirect communication approach and a desired organizational structure. Channel choice is a consideration of the means of communication in terms of either writing or speaking. And cultural strategy recognizes that business operates in multicultural settings and therefore needs to be sensitive and flexible to the most effective way of communicating within that particular cultural setting. This could also be true even regarding various age groups, because certainly the way that you deal with children is going to be different from the way you would deal with adults. And the way you deal with young people or teenagers is going to be different from the way you deal with children or the way that you deal with adults. All of this has to do with communication style, of course. The act of communicating a message can be divided into four separate styles. The two dimensions consider how much you want to maintain control over your content and how you want to involve your audience. The more you control, the less you involve, and the more you involve, the less you control. What an astounding principle to remember. If I lecture, I control. If I open for discussion, I am in less control. If I do all the talking, I control. If I ask questions and wait for response, I am in less control. One truly has to be more knowledgeable to be in less control. One who has a limited amount of knowledge never wants to lose control, for they fear that someone is going to guide them into unexplored knowledge territory and they will have no answer. The four styles, of course, and as we think about communicative style, the four styles are tell, sell, consult, and join. The tell style provides information with the objective of teaching the audience. For the sell style, you're persuading with the goal of convincing the audience to perform. In the consult style, you're interacting with your audience with some control, as in a question and answer session. And for the join style, you and your audience are in a collaboration together to derive the content and to arrive at a conclusion, such as in a brainstorming session, which I'm sure at some point you have been involved in. One of the things that you do in this whole idea of communication style is to be very much involved in a constituency analysis. Constituency analysis involves identification of specific groups and subgroups within the community at large that contain certain qualities as a group, and these qualities will influence how they receive and interpret the communicative message about you or your company. The objective with a constituency analysis is to first identify who the constituency really is, then determine what its attitude is toward the organization, and then determine what the constituents already know about the communication in question. It's not always obvious who the main constituency is, and subgroups with different qualities also likely exist within that main constituency. Thus, the analysis of relative constituents is an important issue that ultimately determines the nature of the message for organizations. Of course, all of this has to do with corporate communication, which is a vital part of what we've been discussing. And this is an emerging field today that has been increasingly recognized as a critical function within business organizations, this whole concept of corporate communication. Corporate communication focuses on an entire function of management. The field of study has been evolving throughout the 20th century in schools of communication and journalism in the areas of public relations or public affairs, and the concept of infiltrating this into the business realm, as large corporations today understand, is sometimes referred to as corporate communication. A part of corporate communication is to, in one way or another, identify and reflect a corporate image. Image is a reflection of the organization's reality. The corporation, in other words, has seen through the eyes of its constituents. Hence, an organization will likely have different images with different constituencies. For example, forest products may have a very negative image among environmental activists, but a very positive image among those who use the product. Corporate communication departments conduct research to understand different constituent needs and attitudes, and then they try to develop better communication with those constituencies, actually to enhance their image. How the community sees your organization is extremely important. And this certainly also has to do with corporate identity, which we've discussed. Corporate identity prizes the visual manifestation of the company's image. This is seen as in such things as the company logo and its stationery, its uniforms, its buildings, its brochures, its advertising. Identity consulting firms and graphic designers work with organizations to create logos and other manifestations of identity that are conducive to a positive relationship with the public. These firms increasingly rely on business schools to provide personnel for this growing field. And certainly when you think about corporate communication, you think about corporate image, you think about corporate identity, and at some point in working through all of this and arriving at a bottom line, there are going to be crises that you have to face. And one part of organizational communication would have to be crisis communication. Most managers and all communication experts agree that crises need to be planned for and coordinated by a corporate communication function. Typically, a broad group of managers from various parts of the organization are included in the process. But the actual execution of a crisis communication plan is the opportunity or responsibility of a corporate communication department. Responsibilities for planning include risk assessment, setting communication objectives for potential crisis, assigning teams to each crisis, planning for centralization, deciding what to include in a formal plan for a crisis. For the actual execution of a crisis communication plan, communicators are responsible for taking control, gathering information, creating a centralized crisis management center, and doing the actual communication, and certainly making plans to avoid other types of crisis. A very important part of what you're involved in as a manager or a administrator would be employee communication. more broadly, this is often or sometimes referred to as internal communication. Employee communication is an important component in retaining a happy and productive workforce. Companies must explain complicated health and benefit packages, changes in laws that affect employees, changes in the marketplace that might affect the company in the future. Additionally, they must boost the morale of the employees after downsizing or reengineering. Although many of these activities can be handled through personnel departments, the communication itself and the strategy for communicating these ideas must come from communication experts in the corporate communication field. Most Fortune 500 companies now use corporate communication departments instead of human resource departments to address these issues. This sub-function of corporate communication is growing rapidly in most organizations and requires a deeper understanding of business as a whole than it did in the past. And one of the things that certainly we have seen is that communication is not a one-way street. Therefore, effective communication is not one individual dominating a conversation. Hence, a masterful communicator will not only know how to express his or her ideas, but should also be a good listener. By listening well to others, you will increase your understanding. You'll certainly receive more detailed information, and it motivates increased cooperation. One component of listening skills is nonverbal, and includes maintaining good eye contact and looking and acting interested in what other people are saying. Show your interest by nodding your head and using brief encouragement such as, "I see," or "yes." Avoid obvious signs of impatience such as looking at your watch, reading, or looking out of the window. Listening skills involve improving the ability, certainly, to be objective and empathetic. And this is all a part of what a manager does in management communication. Now, management communication can be both an academic discipline, which is typically at the graduate level, and also the process of communicating in management itself. Management communication appears in professional settings where a given message is designed for a particular audience with the objective of eliciting a special kind or specific response. Effective managerial communication, either written or spoken, is based on a cohesive strategy combining communicator strategy, audience strategy, message strategy, channel choice strategy, and culture strategy. We also understand that in addition to words and visual aids, communication also consists of nonverbal messages. Nonverbal messages include the way you look, the way you appear, the way you sound to others. Experts estimate that nonverbal delivery, these elements account for 65 to 90% of what gets communicated. So nonverbal delivery is an extremely important element in speaking skills. Elements to consider when analyzing nonverbal skills include body language, voice quality, and use of space. Practice and relaxation are two of the tools that can help in nonverbal communication. Again, all of this is involved in organizational communication. Corporate communications' ability to unify internal and external communications under one business unit enables greater consistency in the corporate image and identity. Therefore, corporate communication can be used as a tool to facilitate more effective organizational communication. Sometimes we have to be involved in persuasion. When communicating, your objective often is to persuade the audience to accept the message that you are conveying to it. Persuasion is connected to the feasibility of the message that you are promoting, but there are also other factors that can enhance the persuasiveness of your argument. For example, establishing credibility based both on the initial impressions of the audience as well as the credibility acquired while speaking are an integral element that enhances persuasiveness. The implementation of an appropriate audience strategy to promote the audience's evaluation of your message is a way that appeals to it as a factor in creating a persuasive forum for audience acceptance of your message. And, of course, one of the things that you can use in almost any communicative setting are visual aids. We notice that these are tools for gaining and sustaining audience attention while presenting oral presentations. Visual aids provide support for your ideas and keep the audience connected with your presentation. Visual aids increase audience comprehension and retention by making the audience members actively analyze the visual information presented. Visual aids enhance the presentation by adding interest, variety, and impact, and may create a visual memory that stays with the audience longer than words do. We actually remember over 75% of what we see. This brings us to the end of number 6.